I know that tomorrow, in houses all over this country, you're going to have the following dialogue between parents and children. The mother is going to say it's Mother's Day, and the child's going to say, well, that's an invented holiday. The mother's going to say, nonetheless, it's Mother's Day, and the child's going to say, when is Child's Day? And the mother will say, every day. And I bring this up because a lot of holidays we celebrate are invented holidays. In one sense, you could say every holiday is an invented holiday. It just depends when you invent it. Some of them were invented a long time ago. Some of them were invented recently. But what may surprise you is a holiday that all of us think of as natural, which is your birthday, was never celebrated in the Jewish tradition. The first birthdays that we know of that were celebrated in Judaism were in the 19th century, just a couple hundred years ago, which in the Jewish tradition is yesterday. In medieval times, in ancient times, in the Torah, people don't celebrate birthdays. But there is a day in the life of a person that they do mark, always. Not the first day, but the last day. We celebrate the Yahrzeit, the anniversary of the passing of notable figures in our tradition. And not only do we celebrate or commemorate the life of someone on the day that he or she passed from this world, but we are enjoined to do the same for people in our families. There is no Jewish tradition that you have to mark the anniversary of the birthday of someone in your family who has passed away, but you must mark the day on which they die. You light a candle to mark that day. And traditionally, if the person was a rabbi or a scholar, you teach a lesson in their name on that day. And that is a beautiful tradition, and one that I am about to observe. Because today is the first Yahrzeit of my father's passing. And because he was a rabbi and a teacher, and because he left that legacy to me and to his other children, and today happens to be the Yahrzeit, I want to teach a lesson in his name. An important lesson that he certainly taught to me and to many others that I think, even though we recognize it intellectually, is slipping away from us in our society. And if I had to think of a single story that embodied this lesson in his life, it was when I was a child in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And Harrisburg Hospital, which was the hospital that served our community and was near our home, the head of Harrisburg Hospital came to my father and said, "We need a medical ethics panel to decide about who needs dialysis in our city receives dialysis, who has kidney ailments will receive dialysis, and who won't." And my father said, "Why do you need such a panel?" And he said, "Because, believe it or not, at that time, there was one dialysis machine in the city of Harrisburg. Only one. And it was going to operate all day long, but even so, it could only take a very small number of patients, and that meant that the people who didn't receive dialysis would die." And so they were asking my father to choose who would live and who would die, along with a couple of other doctors, ethicists, priests, and my father said, "No, I can't do that. How can I decide?" And then he told me years later, the head of the hospital said something to him that he never forgot. He said, "You know, Rabbi, someone's going to decide. If you don't, who will?" So he decided to do it. And it began his career in medical ethics, and that's a legacy that he handed on to my brother, who's the head of the Ethics Center at Emory and specializes in medical ethics. But what he learned on that day, and what we learned from him again and again. And what we see in the Torah portion this morning is that all of life is about limitations. We teach our children, you can do anything, you can be anything, but what we don't teach them is how many limits life imposes on all of us. Because for every choice you make, that's 1,000 choices that you don't get to make. For every path you go, there are all those paths that you don't take. For every time you think there's a possibility, you recognize simultaneously there's a limitation. God says to Israel, you may have the land of Israel. It's the great promise in the Torah, and all the Israelites are excited and uplifted by this promise. And then what do we learn in this morning's parsha? But you have reverts to its original owner after 50 years. You have to leave the land fallow every 7 years. You don't get to do whatever you want. You may not sow two kinds of seeds together. Every gift is given with restrictions and with limitations. And the reason that's such an important lesson, especially for us, is we, more than any generation that ever lived, exist with possibilities. So much so that whenever we come up against a limitation, we resent it as though it's unnatural. How dare you limit my choice in any area of life? I should be able to do whatever I want. Isn't that the promise of life? But not in the Jewish tradition, and in fact, not in life properly understood. Think about raising a child. More important in some ways than giving a child a sense of possibility is giving them a knowledge of limitations. You may not go to bed whenever you want. Because you may think that that's a function of possibility, but I'm telling you that this limitation ultimately will be better for you. And even though you don't know it, I'm placing limitations on you because limitations are good. You can't actually have Coke for breakfast. Because even though you think I am restricting your choice, which I am, I'm doing it because limitations are good. Chesterton, the Roman Catholic novelist, said the most important thing about a painting is the frame. Because until you know what the limits are, you don't know what you're working with. I remember when I first came to this synagogue and I went around to various rabbis and I asked them, how do you run your synagogue? What do you concentrate on? What do you focus on? What do you try to promote? And one of them, over lunch, looked at me and he said, you want to know what runs your synagogue? The budget. He said, if you want to know what your synagogue cares about, don't listen to what anyone says. See how much you spend on it. See where you put your limitations, because you're going to be limited. You're not going to have unlimited money. Where you limit will tell you what you care about. How you limit will tell you what you love. The reason my parents put limitations on us and not on the kids next door was because they loved us. Limitations are an expression of love. When God says to Israel, you may do this, but you may not do that, it's an expression of God's love. And that knowledge, which is essential, not just for parents and children, but for friends, for family, for anyone who loves each other, that knowledge that sometimes limits are the only way to express love, that's the lesson I learned that we are in danger of forgetting. When we say to people, for example, on your bar or bat mitzvah, your family may have 4 people up to the Torah, but not more. Every family says, but we need more. Every family, because every family has too many people to just bring 4 people up at a time. And what we try to explain to them is it's an act of love to the congregation not to have a large crowd of people up here so that they can't see who's being honored and who isn't. Every limitation is an act of love if the limitation is offered with love and not for the petty reason of just restricting people. That's what it is. And that's what I learned. And the Torah, again and again and again, tells us this. When it says, "Ubacharta bechayim," you should choose life, it assumes that choosing life is choosing God's law. And we, growing up in America, assume that choosing life means choosing a vast, unrestricted prairie with no mountains and no rivers and no borders and no divide, but you can't live that way. Every family builds a house because you need the limits of walls to have the restrictions of intimacy. Every country has borders, because if you don't have borders, you don't have a country. Every human being has boundaries. People that you let in, people that you keep out. People who exist at different levels of intimacy in your life, because limits are an expression of love. For 11 months, you say Kaddish for a parent. The interesting part of saying Kaddish for a parent is that it is simultaneously an act that is beautiful and wonderful and an act that is incredibly restrictive. Every single day, you don't get a day off. And then, the day that you stop saying Kaddish, you both feel liberated and depressed. Because the day that you stop saying Kaddish is really the day you let go. There's nothing else to do. You're done saying Kaddish. But that limitation is an expression of the Jewish tradition's love. You can only mourn this much, and then you have to stop. You're not allowed to say Kaddish in the 12th month, even if you want to, even if you feel like it, even if you think that would be an expression of love. It's not. The expression of love is to have a limit. It is to stop. And in that stopping, you realize that nothing and no one is forever. That all of us have a limit. We have a limit to our lives and to the lives of those we love. And the reason that that lesson is the lesson of love is because you start to live the day that you know you don't have forever. You start to live the day that you know you don't have forever. So the limit is the love. And the day I finished Kaddish, it was one more limitation and one more lesson of love that I learned from the man who taught me so many lessons. My father, Zichrono Livracha, may his memory continue in my life and others to be for a blessing. Shabbat Shalom.